The headlines this hour. Iran says guarantees on the removal of sanctions are necessary for any agreement to revive the JCPOA and calls on the U.S. to show political will for a deal. Two Russian embassy staff and four Afghan civilians are killed after a suicide bomber detonated explosives near the Russian embassy in Kabul. And Liz Truss becomes the UK's next prime minister after winning an internal leadership contest of the ruling Conservative Party. Hello and welcome. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Iran says negotiations to revive the 2015 nuclear deal could come to a conclusion if the U.S. shows political will.
If there is a political will and if the United States follows suit on Iran and acts constructively, if they seek to move forward, the negotiations could come to a conclusion in a short time and we can hopefully reach an agreement.
Khanani added that Tehran has conveyed to the European Union its viewpoints on the latest U.S. response on how to conclude the talks. Khanani says this is a show of Tehran's determination to resolve differences. The spokesman also said guarantees on the removal of sanctions are necessary for any agreement. He says the same goes for an end to the persistent anti-Iran allegations by the International Atomic Energy Agency. Khanani stressed that Iran expects the agency to act within its professional obligations. Iran warns that it will not tolerate new threats posed by the U.S. to maritime security in the region. The chief of staff of Iran's armed forces says there are reports that unmanned spy units are being deployed in regional waters. Major General Mohammad Bagheri says Iranian vessels will not tolerate the presence of such equipment in their route and will make sure to counter them. He says that Iran will protect its right to freedom and security of navigation in international waters. The remarks come days after Iran seized two U.S. surface drones in the Red Sea for endangering maritime traffic. Blasts outside of the Russian embassy in the Afghan capital Kabul has claimed at least six lives and injured nearly a dozen more. The Russian Foreign Ministry says the embassy's second secretary and a security guard are among those killed after a suicide bomber detonated explosives close to the entrance of the complex. Kabul's police say four Afghan civilians were also killed. The Taliban say the attacker was shot dead while he was approaching the embassy gate. No group or individual has so far claimed responsibility. The Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov has called the attack a terrorist act. Violence in Afghanistan has largely declined since the Taliban returned to power last year, but the war-ravaged nation has experienced several bomb blasts in recent months, mostly claimed by the Daesh terror group. Abdullah Rizada is our correspondent joining us from Afghanistan's capital, Kabul, to give us the latest on this story. Well, Abdullah, at this point, we just said that there has been no claim of responsibility. Is that still the case?
Well, yes, Mr. Taghvai, no one has yet claimed the responsibility for the explosion that happened today at around 11 a.m. and killed six people. According to Abdul Kahar Balkhi, according to Khalid Zadran, the spokesman of the police in Kabul, four Afghans, also he mentioned that four soldiers of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan were killed, and two Russian diplomats, one diplomat, as you mentioned, and one security guard. And also he mentioned that the attacker was first targeted by soldiers. He was shot at, and after taking some shots, the explosive that he had with him went off and the explosion happened, killing those six people and injuring 10 other people, which was confirmed by Khalid Zadran in an earlier message on Twitter. He also mentioned that this attack, this incident, is under heavy investigation and hoped that they would get to some information about who might have done it, but there is still no information and no group, no person, no one has claimed the attack. Also, Sergei Lavrov, after confirming that the Russian embassy in Kabul has lost two person, and after condemning this attack, said that the terrorist threats from Afghanistan have not disappeared yet, and he hoped that the perpetrators of such actions would be arrested soon and would be held responsible for what they have done. Also, Abdulkahar Balkhi, Minister of Foreign Affairs of Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, mentioned that the security agencies, that the information agencies of Afghanistan are investigating this incident, and that they are doing their best to take more serious measures to keep security at these embassies, the Russian embassy especially. And he also mentioned that they hope this incident today does not affect the relation between the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan and Moscow. The Embassy of Islamic Republic of Iran also, after condemning this attack, said that they hope the perpetrators of such actions get arrested and be punished for what they have done. Finally, according to experts, such attacks can affect the presence of diplomats, foreign diplomats in Afghanistan, and if the Taliban do not be able to keep security and safety for the diplomats, it might affect their presence. And to wrap it up, no one has yet claimed the attack, and we must still wait to see if there would be anyone to claim it or not.
I mean, it's not something that's common, obviously, this attack, which appears to target the Russian embassy. If that is the case, we're not sure, obviously, and it's speculation at this point. But is there any clues as to why the Russian embassy, or maybe the people that were outside are applying for visas, perhaps? I'm not too sure. Again, based on speculation, why this would be a target for anybody, really?
Well, for one thing, we could mention the crowd. The crowd might be the target. I can't really personally give my own opinion. I'm not an expert on that. But one thing we know is that in every terrorist attack, the crowd matters. If there is a crowd, there is a threat in Afghanistan.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for that, Abdullah Mirzada, correspondent there from Kabul. Many thanks. Moving on, Palestinians have held a funeral for a young man shot dead by Israeli forces in the northern occupied West Bank. Palestinian Health Ministry says Taher Mohammed Zakarneh was shot dead in the head and in his left brain. He was targeted during an Israeli raid on the morning. Arrest during the raid. Tensions are mounting across the occupied territories, escalating raids and crackdown. Palestinians conduct retaliatory operations to avenge the regime's atrocities. On Sunday, gunmen wounded 11 Israeli troopers in an attack on a bus near the city of Tobas in the occupied West Bank. In the UK, Liz Truss has been named new Conservative leader and the next Prime Minister after a bitter and divisive party leadership contest. Truss won 57% of the Conservative Party members' vote, defeating her rival, former Finance Minister Rishi Sunak. She will succeed Boris Johnson, who was forced to resign in July following a series of scandals. The former foreign secretary inherits serious challenges. Those include a flagging economy with inflation at a 40-year high and soaring energy bills amid the war in Ukraine. The British pound has also dropped to its lowest level against the U.S. dollar since 1985. The Kremlin says Western sanctions are to blame for problems with gas supply to European countries, rejecting claims that Russia uses energy as a political tool amid tensions with the West.
Problems with gas supply arose because of the sanctions imposed on our country and several Russian companies by Western states, including Germany and Britain. There are no other reasons that lead to problems with supplies. Obviously, the only turbine is working and it is malfunctioning. Breakages happen there that leads to supply stoppages.
Peskov said sanctions are causing chaos in terms of maintenance work on the Nord Stream 1 gas pipeline between Russia and China, or Germany. The Russian energy giant Gazprom has completely halted supplies to the pipeline, saying that it detected a leak during a maintenance work last week. The Kremlin spokesman has, however, warned that Russia would retaliate against the proposal by the group of seven developed countries to impose a price cap on Russian oil. The G7 finance ministers agreed to the proposal on Friday in a bid to pressure Russia over its war in Ukraine. Moscow says it will stop selling oil to any country that implements the price cap. China accuses the U.S. of launching a host of cyber attacks and stealing troves of sensitive data.
13 people in the U.S. were involved and directly launched cyber attacks against China. We found more than 60 contracts and 170 electronic documents signed with U.S. telecom operators to build a cyber attack environment.
The foreign ministry spokeswoman further said the data hacked by a U.S. spy agency includes a government-funded university with aeronautics and space research programs. She called the move illegal, saying that it seriously endangers China's national security and users' personal data. The foreign ministry has urged Washington to immediately stop such acts and provide a clear explanation. China and the U.S. have traded blames of cyber espionage in the past. The top two economies remain at odds over a host of regional and international issues. Moving to Afghanistan's neighbor China, where a 6.6 magnitude earthquake has left more than 20 people dead. This quake hit Sichuan province in the southwest is where this happened. Initial reports showing homes in a number of towns to have sustained serious damage. Telecommunication lines have also been cut off in some areas. Chinese media say that over 500 rescue workers have been sent to the epicenter. Several aftershocks in nearby areas have been reported. At least 8 people are confirmed dead in an earthquake that rocked Afghanistan's northeast in the early hours of Monday. The deaths are reported in the province of Kunar, along the eastern border with Pakistan. Authorities expect the toll to rise. They are also reporting financial damage. The epicenter of the 5.3 magnitude tremor was near the city of Jalalabad in the adjacent Nangarhar province. The earthquake was also felt in the capital, Kabul. Afghanistan is still recovering from a strong quake that killed more than 1,000 people and injured over 1,500 others back in June. Pakistani authorities are struggling to prevent fresh floods as the country's biggest lake risks bursting its banks. Water has already been released from the major freshwater lake to nearby districts. That's in the hope of stopping a potential overflow and more floods as water level remains dangerously high. Authorities have also been forced to evacuate up to 100,000 people to make room for the breached water. Deadly floods have killed more than 1,300 people in Pakistan over the past weeks. The flooding is triggered by record monsoon rains and melting glaciers in the north. The government and the United Nations both blame climate change for the extreme weather. The United States' history of occupation and intervention in Latin America spans almost 200 years. The U.S. has been present in countries from the north of the continent in one way or another in order to achieve its own goals. But now the latest U.S. attempts to intervene in Cuba's affairs have drawn a backlash from officials there.
American intervention in Latin America began in 1823 when President James Monroe declared the continent to be a U.S. sphere of influence. Under the Monroe Doctrine, Washington claimed the right to intervene militarily across Latin America. That led to the Banana Wars, in which the U.S. military fought to reassert American power and monopoly of plantations in Central America, Mexico, and the Caribbean. Washington has so far orchestrated and supported many coups across Latin America that have been characterized as U.S. foreign policy in the region since the early 20th century. Throughout history, there's been a lot of U.S. meddling in Latin America, especially in Central America. U.S. foreign policy towards Central America heightened during the Cold War and the spread of the leftist movements and revolutions. Many believe that the success of the Cuban Revolution in the 1950s made the U.S. nervous to think that there could be political superpowers like the USSR at the time, leading them in getting involved in what they perceived as their backyard. All this set the stage for a sustained and violent U.S. intervention across Central America, backing vicious local allies in wars that claimed thousands of lives and displaced millions. The latest U.S. attempts of intervening in Latin America in its long list of interventions is considered as what it calls funding for democracy promotion in Cuba. Havana has, however, slammed the move, saying it's illegal and aimed at toppling the government. Let's not forget the USAID program in Cuba. As it was reported at the time, the U.S. secretly created Cuban Twitter to stir unrest and undermine the government of President at the time, Fidel Castro. It started a social network built on texts in hope that it could be used to organize smart mobs to trigger a Cuban spring. The island nation, which is currently facing its worst economic crisis in decades amid U.S. sanctions, announced electricity blackouts this month. Along with soaring food, fuel, and medicine prices as shortage grips, people are observing long queues for necessities. The U.S. trade embargo, which has been in place against Cuba since 1962, was reinforced under former President Donald Trump. Meanwhile, Trump's successor has also chosen to follow the same path. U.S. intervention has gone far enough that some Congress lawmakers have even advocated for bombing strikes.
We can go back to 1960, in fact, and the Mallory Rubottom memo. It's a State Department memo that lays out the scenario that Cuba is experiencing today. It says that as secretly as the wording is actually as inconspicuously as possible to disrupt the livelihoods, the employment, the income of the Cuban people. So this has been a policy ever, you know, since 1960, April 6, 1960. The other part of that is that they intend to press the people into rebellion against the government. So clearly, regime change is part of the program.
And that is it for World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
U.S. President Joe Biden's wrong policies have caused many immigrants to be harassed and tortured at the American borders and even spend a long time in detention centers. Many analysts believe that Joe Biden is doing the same wrong Trump's policies against immigrants. These policies have put the lives of many immigrants in danger, and even human rights groups have reacted to U.S. President's immigration policies. In this regard, we have taken a look at some of the world press and news agencies to shed more light on the issue. Stay tuned, please. The Truth Out website explains more about the wrong immigration policies by the U.S. administration, saying hopes for abolishing one of U.S. most harmful immigration policies, including deportation following incarceration in the criminal legal system or double punishment, are withering as the Biden administration continues to snub immigration reform. According to a recent Syracuse University report, 3,481 immigrants are currently in removal proceedings because of criminal charges, and many of them were seized upon their release from prison before they could take even a single breath in freedom. And while that number is on track to be less than last year, advocates warn that without changing the underlying laws, rules, and policies, what goes down this reporting period can go up in the next. Heidi Altman, Director of Policy for the National Immigrant Justice Center, NIJC, told Truthout, "The numbers are still astronomical in terms of sheer numbers of people deported from their loved ones after a conviction or arrest," adding, "There are many ways this could be done even without congressional action through reversal of harmful Board of Immigration Appeals precedent, through rulemaking to allow greater access to bond hearings for those detained on the basis of criminal convictions, through processes to allow those unjustly deported to be returned, and/or through policy memos and training that requires officers to consider the racial bias inherent in the criminal legal system when making detention and deportation decisions. But none of that has happened. Instead of being returned to their families and communities for re-entry to society, they are often held 6 months or more in private for-profit detention facilities and then deported to countries where they may not have lived for decades, know no one, and do not speak the language." WTTW Channel 11 is a PBS member television station in Chicago, Illinois. The TV channel's website has published an article concerning this issue, saying the U.S. Supreme Court has certified its ruling allowing the Biden administration to end the Migrant Protection Protocol's policy, better known as Remain in Mexico. The policy was a part of former President Donald Trump's border policy, forcing migrants seeking asylum in the U.S. to wait in Mexico for hearings. In June, a Supreme Court decision overruled a lower court that forced the policy to be reinstated in December. But while President Joe Biden previously tried to end the policy, there has been little comment thus far on when his administration might officially follow through. Gladys Molina Alt, executive director of the Young Center for Immigrant Children's Rights, said she has spent time along the U.S.-Mexico border and the situation remains very difficult for the migrants in limbo. Molina Alt said, "What I have seen on the ground is families, parents, we talked about having to make a difficult decision on whether they remain in Mexico waiting for their cases to be processed or make that difficult decision to have their kids across the border by themselves while they remain in Mexico. So family unity is something that we've seen be an issue at stake on the ground," she said. "We've also heard both who are in these MMPs PP camps talk about the security issues that they face, the kidnapping that happens, the rapes that happened, the violations of human rights for them as migrants in Mexico that take place. In addition to criticisms from the human rights organizations of the Joe Biden administration in continuing Donald Trump's wrong policies toward immigrants, some American officials have also criticized Biden administration's wrong policies toward immigrants. According to a New York Post report, the chief of the U.S. Border Patrol blamed President Biden's wrong immigration policies for sparking the surge of illegal immigrants crossing into the U.S. Raul Ortiz made the frank admission that the administration's wrong policies are to blame in a recorded deposition that is part of a lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security by Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody. TheWhistleblower.org says while many public health experts urge the Biden administration to end the use of Title 42 in immigration cases, it remained government policy to do so until April, when the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, finally announced its termination. But just days before the CDC order was to take effect on May 23rd, a Trump-appointed general judge in Louisiana blocked the lifting of Title 42, claiming it violated administrative law and would cause irreparable harm. Yet opposition to the lifting of Title 42 isn't solely coming from Trump appointees and Republicans. For example, the Public Health and Border Security Act, which would require all COVID-19-related national states of emergency to be lifted before Title 42 is officially terminated, was introduced in April by Senators James Lankford, Republican of Oklahoma, and Kristen Sinema, Democrat of Arizona, along with nine other senators, including Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia. Dawn Wooten, a single mother of five, used to work as a full-time nurse at the Irvin County Detention Center in Osceola, Georgia, which was operated by the private contractor LaSalle Corrections. Though she was not officially terminated by her employer, she wasn't called back to work after she began speaking out about unimaginable atrocities being committed against immigrant detainees there. Wooten shared disturbing accounts of medical misconduct at the center, including the refusal by authorities to screen detainees for COVID-19 and the destruction of medical records. Unfortunately, these types of abuses at detention facilities aren't isolated incidents. According to Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, CRU, and the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU of Florida, the Glades County Detention Center in Moorhaven, Florida, has a history of radicalized violence, sexually abusive behavior, medical neglect, and inhumane treatment of immigrants. CRU and the ACLU of Florida filed a federal lawsuit in April against ICE and the National Archives and Records Administration, accusing Glades officials of deleting surveillance videos that could verify claims of abuse by detainees. The Truth Out website wrote in June 2021, Illinois passed laws that banned police from assisting ICE in making arrests and ended private civil detention facilities in the state. Following its lead, other states are starting to move legislation to protect their immigrant communities from double punishment. Most notably, the California legislature is considering the Vision Act, and advocates far and wide are excited that its potential passage in a populous and politically important state could lead other states to close the prison to deportation pipeline and further decriminalize immigration. The Vision Act would prohibit collaboration with ICE to remove people who are being released from prison to jail. Under it, immigration status will no longer be used as a determining factor in how people are treated by state and local agencies and its courts. It would also abolish certain discriminatory record-keeping and reporting requirements. According to the latest published statistics, U.S. authorities arrested more than 221,000 people at the Mexican border in May alone, which is the highest number in 1 month in more than two decades. Experts have cited extreme poverty, rampant violence, and natural disasters caused by climate change in Latin America, especially in the countries of El Salvador, Guatemala, Haiti, and Honduras, for the rampant increase of immigrants to the American borders.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وصي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the Charter of Islamic Governance based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. Previously, we discussed about the issue of the truth and the falsehood and how recognizing, following and being under that authority, under the authority of truthfulness, is very important. But one of the other things that happened in governments and in a certain community which is governed by a true force, by an Islamic government, or even sometimes in other governments, what happens is that there are kind of small uprisings that happen, some kind of antagonization or antagony against the government. And we need to recognize carefully on what to do, what steps to take, to understand whether this kind of opposition that is happening, what is the crux and the, you can say, the quiddity or the reality of this this opposition. Recognizing this this is very important so that we can kind of show that right direction at the right time. And this is something that we're going to analyze, inshallah, in the coming few sessions. And one of the very important things that happened was the issue of the death of Uthman, and how people were uprising and opposing Imam Ali alayhi salam in the name of Uthman, and they were trying to put the blame of the death of Uthman on the shoulders of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Well, Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. We are talking about the important discussion of how Imam Ali was trying to bring about this awareness in the minds of the people regarding certain forms of uprising that were happening, especially in the name of the death of Uthman, in the name of revenge or avenging the death of Uthman, and the movements that came against Imam Ali for that. The reality is that people were using the issue of the death of Uthman just as a scapegoat or just as an excuse to kind of disturb the rulership of Imam Ali alayhi salam, to go against, to oppose, to fight Imam Ali alayhi salam. It is very clear. They knew that Imam Ali alayhi salam is the epitome of truth and justice. They knew that. But yet, you can see people like Muawiyah, how much he used the excuse of avenging the death of Uthman to fight Imam Ali alayhi salam. Of course, people like Muawiyah was from previously a friend of Uthman, you know, and they were together in different fields. But also people like Talha and Zubair, who were really firm against Uthman. In fact, they had a similar stance like Imam Ali alayhi salam regarding Uthman. Rather, Talha was even more, you can say he was very clearly against Uthman and was quite, strongly expressing firm views against, Uthman. In fact, to a certain degree, even, supporting the killing of Uthman. Even Aisha, the wife of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, even she took a very clear stance against Uthman. She pushed him away. She even told him bad things, used bad words against him. She had such a firm stance against him that she once took out the shirt of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and showed the people that, look, the shirt of the Prophet is still fine. It is not yet, it has not yet become spoilt it has not yet become destroyed, while the sunnah of the Prophet is now being destroyed by Uthman. Such was her statement and such was her firm stance against Uthman. But yet we see that when it came to Imam Ali alayhi salam, all of these people, Talha, Zubair, Muawiyah and Aisha, the wife of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, all of them, they went against Imam Ali alayhi salam and they formed a coalition against him.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. The sermon number 30 is focusing on the whole issue of the uprising for the sake of avenging Uthman's blood against Imam Ali alayhi salam. Of course, Imam Ali alayhi salam had no role in this issue. And this was just an excuse to fight against Imam Ali alayhi salam. If Imam Ali alayhi salam, even let's say if Uthman had not been killed, they would have definitely found another excuse, another, hammer to come and destroy the government of Imam Ali alayhi salam. This is because evil, this is a very important principle, evil never stops by itself out of its own volition. Evil, if you leave evil by itself, evil will want to continue to propagate, to do its bad things. It will never stop by itself unless you stop it. And as such, it will always find excuses to do what is wrong. In summary, what is important is that, we need to perform the right thing. Don't say, for example, don't wear hijab, because if you wear hijab, these people will say you guys are barbaric. Or for example, some people say when you go in the Western countries or in other countries, don't speak against falsehood, don't speak against interest or something that is not allowed in Islam. Don't speak against alcohol. Why do you give excuses for the enemies to attack you? If the falsehood wants to destroy you, If it wants to fight you, it will find any excuse. You don't have to give an excuse to them. So don't think that, for example, if you stop wearing hijab, they will stop fighting against Muslims. They are against the very core principle of accepting the governance of Allah. So don't think that these excuses with this feeling that, you know, we should stop giving excuses to the enemies, you kind of compromise on your ideals. No. Whether you like it or not, they will find every excuse to attack you if they want to attack you. So, my brothers and sisters, this is something very important to keep in mind. Inshallah, let us pray to Allah that He give us the opportunity to understand these issues. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The United States and its allies invaded Afghanistan 20 years ago, destroyed the country's infrastructure, killed Afghan civilians, and stole their money, and now they seem to be so indifferent to the crisis that is gripping the war-torn country. Although Afghanistan is dealing with a humanitarian crisis, this country seems to be completely forgotten by the U.S. and the West. The U.N. humanitarian chief has recently told the United Nations Security Council that Afghanistan faces multiple crises, including humanitarian, economic, climate, hunger, and financial. But who cares? The Western media? The Western politicians? The so-called defenders of human rights? In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. Stay with us, please. In this regard, Al Jazeera said the UN humanitarian chief has urged donors to restore funding for development in Afghanistan that was frozen by the US, warning that 6 million people were at risk of famine. Martin Griffiths told the United Nations Security Council that Afghanistan faces multiple crises, including humanitarian, economic, climate, hunger, and financial, and that donors should immediately provide $770 million to help Afghans survive the coming cold month. Conflict, poverty, climate shocks, and food insecurity have long been a sad reality in Afghanistan, but said what makes the current situation so critical is the halt to larger-scale development aid. Poverty is deepening, the population is still growing, and the de facto authorities have no budget to invest in their own future. It's clear to us that some development support needs to be restarted, Griffith said. More than half of Afghanistan, 39 million people, need humanitarian help, and 6 million are at risk of famine. More than a million children are estimated to be suffering from the more severe life-threatening form of malnutrition and could die without proper treatment, he said. Griffith said, $614 million is urgently required to prepare for winter, including repairing and upgrading shelters and providing warm clothes and blankets, and an additional $154 million to organize food and other supplies before the weather restricts access to certain areas. With more than 70% of Afghans living in rural areas, Griffiths warned that if agriculture and livestock production are not protected, millions of lives and livelihoods will be risked, and the country's capacity to produce food imperiled. He said the country's banking and liquidity crisis and the extreme difficulty of international financial transactions must also be tackled. According to Al Jazeera, billions of dollars in Afghan central bank reserves held mainly in the United States have also been frozen by foreign governments. Russia's UN ambassador Vasily Benenzia accused the United States and its allies of abandoning Afghans to face ruin, poverty, terrorism, hunger, and other challenges. Instead of acknowledging their own mistakes and supporting the reconstruction of the destroyed country, he said, they blocked Afghan financial resources and disconnected its central bank from SWIFT, the dominant system for global financial transactions. China's UN ambassador Zhang Jun also accused the US and its allies of evading responsibility and abandoning the Afghan people and imposing political isolation and blockade. The website of Crescent International wrote, "The Afghan people's plight is so desperate that they are selling whatever little furniture or silverware they have for cash." According to a report compiled by the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, SIGAR, people are selling their kidneys. Some Afghan families are even forced to sell their daughters in order to have a few less mouth to feed and to provide a few more cells of food for their remaining children. Western do-gooders that are so anxious to get Afghan girls educated should perhaps stop starving them to death. Afghanistan's liquidity crisis is compounded by the fact that it has been effectively cut off from the global financial system. Further, there is not enough cash, whether in dollars or Afghanis, the local currency. The reason is that, unlike most other countries, Afghanistan doesn't print its own money. So even if people have money in the bank, they cannot access it. Commercial banks do not have cash. Let us consider what Western relief agencies and the UN have said about the situation in Afghanistan. More than 18 million Afghans are facing acute food insecurity, about half of the country's entire population, according to World Food Programme WFP. In March 2022, the United Nations said almost 95% of Afghans aren't getting enough to eat, what a UN official called a figure so high that it is almost inconceivable. Nearly 4 million children are acutely malnourished. According to the World Food Program, 92% of households reported having debt. 88% said buying food forced them to borrow. In the midst of this U.S.-imposed humanitarian catastrophe, the Washington warlords have resumed drone strikes on Afghanistan. Their collaborators in the other countries' military are facilitating such criminal activity. Americans are fond of producing glossy reports extolling the virtues of their occupation. According to CIGAR, for 20 years, the U.S. set aside nearly $150 billion for Afghanistan reconstruction. During the same period, the U.S. spent an estimated $2.3 trillion on the war, according to Brown University's Cost of War project. What Biden and none of his predecessors will ever admit is that America's war on Afghanistan was a racket. It spawned a culture of corruption in which the Afghan collaborators siphoned off a few billion dollars while the bulk of $2.3 trillion was sucked back into the U.S. economy. The war merchants made a killing, literally and figuratively. This was the real purpose of the war, and it was a huge success.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, the Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we would like to recite and narrate for you, our esteemed listeners, a beautiful hadith which has been narrated from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam regarding weeping from the fear of Allah. The fear of God is one of the central and most important virtues in the totality of Islamic virtues. It holds a central place in them. In fact, one might say that the fear of God, or which could perhaps be also translated as piety, is perhaps the single most central virtue in Islamic morality. This is something which we could perhaps debate and discuss at a more feasible time. But in any case, no one can doubt how important this is. And when this fear is coupled with weeping and the shedding of tears, it becomes even more beautiful and virtuous. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam has been reported to have said, every single thing has a measure or a weight, except for tears. مَا مِنْ شَيْءٍ إِلَّا وَلَهُ كَيْلٌ أَوْ وَزْنٌ إِلَّا الدُّمُوءٌ. Meaning, you can evaluate, you can estimate the value of everything, right? Except for tears, which can be said to not have any fixed measure. Why? The Imam elucidates on this. For one drop of them can extinguish seas of fire. One drop, which is of tears, which is shed in the fear of God, can extinguish the fire of hell, which is infinite. Right? If an eye is filled with tears, the Imam says, the face will never be burdened with neediness or humiliation. And if it floods with tears, then Allah will make it unlawful for the fire to touch it. Indeed, the Imam says, if a teary man cries for a community, they all receive mercy. This is interesting, right? Not only do the tears which we shed and which come out of our eyes for the fear of God, you know, or from the remorse that we have over our own sins, do they have the value of, extinguishing the fire of hell? But if a man cries for his community, for the sins which are being committed in his community by others, on their behalf, right, then this tears and this weeping and this remorse also has the power extinguish the fire of hell and the punishment which would perhaps be meted out to those other people who are sinning in this person's community. And this community would be shown mercy. Right? Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the value of tears which are shed in the fear of God. Until next time,